Welcome to the Investment Conversation. I'm Tony Fisher. As votes continue to pour in across the U.S., we're doing a special election edition of the podcast today. Without further ado, here's Will Andrews.
Hi, I'm Will Andrews, digital editor for Lord Abbott. So we're concluding one of the most remarkable U.S. election seasons in history. Well, not just yet. As of 7 a.m. New York time on November 4, there was still no clear winner in the contest between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Ahead of the vote, we sat down with Lord Abbott partner and director of strategic asset allocation, Giulio Martini, to get a sense of the implications of this momentous vote from both a historical perspective and the economic and market environment leading up to the election. Giulio, in our prep for this podcast, we spoke about some of the underlying pluses and minuses in the macro environment. Can you go through them with us?
I think there are three major unknowns that we're struggling with right now. And the first, of course, is COVID-19 and the presence of the virus and whether we're going to have a vaccine available anytime soon. There are a number of vaccine and phase three clinical trials. We're waiting for readouts on data to try and understand whether they have a sufficient degree of efficacy. But I think there's just a lot of uncertainty related to that, to therapeutic solutions and to public health measures that could be implemented to deal with the virus. And that's the biggest unknown. The second, I think, is an unknown with regard to fiscal policy. We had a very strong policy response early in March and April from both the Fed and from the federal government in providing support for the economy. But those programs have now basically come to an end, and we need renewed fiscal support to keep the economy on its feet until we get a healthcare solution. So that's the second unknown. And the third, of course, is the election itself. But that's another thing the economy and the markets have been struggling with. Now, counterbalancing that, I think there are some positives for investors that are meaningful. The biggest one is that U.S. Corporate earnings performance has been spectacular. In the second quarter, the magnitude of positive earnings surprises and the breadth of positive earnings surprises set records for the time period in which we have data for those things going back into the early 1990s. The third quarter, as the data are rolling in, looks almost as good. Not quite, but it could be the second best quarter ever for positive earnings surprises and for breadth of earnings surprises. So U.S. companies have really demonstrated a resiliency to the underlying economic situation that is, very surprisingly positive. And I think what that's really demonstrating is that large companies have managed to cope with this environment much, much better than smaller companies and independently owned businesses have. And that's, of course, a benefit to shareholders and something that business owners are struggling with. Another thing that I think is meaningful is that the Chinese economy has made a full recovery. GDP in China is higher than it was before they shut down to deal with the virus. That bounce back has been every bit, what you would have hoped for in a V-shaped recovery. And China is the second largest economy in the world. So when the second largest economy in the world and the largest trading nation in the world bounces back so strongly, it spills over to other parts of the global economy very forcefully. And in contrast to the first half of this year, when all economies were spiraling downward simultaneously, at least now we have a significant part of the global economy, which is pushing very strongly in the other direction and offsetting some of the weakness that we may be seeing elsewhere. And lastly, I would just say that in this environment of tremendous unknowns, of tremendous uncertainty, it's not surprising that investors have taken a very cautious stance with regard to the positioning of their portfolios. Stock allocations are below average, both for retail investors and for institutional investors. And of course, that's something that really is quite good for the market because it's the outlook going forward for returns is much better when investors are positioned conservatively than when they're expecting the best. And we certainly, from what we're able to tell, are seeing conservative positioning. So, you know, there are significant unknowns, but there are also some positives in the environment that I think are very meaningful and that we have to weigh into our decisions as we go about making them.
Now, of course, we'll be digging into the implications of the 2020 results in the days to come. But first, it might be useful to have a bit of basic history on the performance of U.S. equities in the run-up to and the aftermath of presidential elections.
Well, yeah, I'm going to address presidential elections, but also I want to talk about the larger data set that we have of all federal elections. Of course, those happen every 2 years since the end of World War II, because I think we can get some additional information by looking at those as well. And what you see in that history, and there are about 35 of those elections that we can examine, is that the market pretty systematically tends to be weaker before elections and stronger after elections. And that's sort of consistent with the idea that, the election itself creates uncertainty because there can be meaningful political and policy changes afterwards. And then after the election has happened and that uncertainty is resolved, then the market does better once it knows what it's working with going forward. And that pattern of better performance after elections than before holds whether the result of the election is unitary government by Republicans, unitary government by Democrats. Those are basically the same with respect to the outcomes that the market has delivered. What's a little bit better is when you get divided government, meaning that when one of the parties holds at least one of the three out of the presidency in one of the houses of Congress, and the other party controls the other two. So the market has tended to do a little bit better in divided government than in unitary government situations. But, you know, what's quite interesting is to look at some recent examples where that hasn't held, where the market has not done better after an election. We had one of those in 2000, Bush versus Gore, which was an election where election day did not decide the outcome. In fact, we had heightened uncertainty after the election because, we had that problem with vote counting in Florida and nobody really knew who had won until that was resolved. And in that case, the market continued to weaken until mid-December, which is when we got the resolution of electoral uncertainty. And then, of course, in 2008, after Barack Obama was elected for the first time, the market did badly because the election took place in the right after the worst financial crisis that we had had since the 1930s, and with the economy in a very deep recession. So that even though that election did resolve, uncertainty about who was going to be governing and what the lineup would be in Congress, the market continued to fall until early February because what was unknown was, how deep the recession would be. I think this is, a very interesting case where it's not as simple as, pre-election uncertainty gets resolved and then we move on in a normal economic situation. This is clearly an abnormal situation, and we'll have to see whether the election does in fact resolve the uncertainty that we're dealing with going into it.
When we spoke earlier, you told us that there are some misconceptions about what presidential victories for Democrats or Republicans might mean for the market. What might investors be getting wrong about this?
Well, everybody campaigns on the basis of a wish list, and then they have to confront the reality of governing once they, step into the presidency or control of Congress or what have you. And the reality of governing is very different from the wish list that you talk about on a campaign. So, for instance, President Trump was talking about a big infrastructure program if he became president. And, that's something that never happened among, the many things that did and did not happen. So, there's always an incomplete fulfillment of the goals and the promises that a president has when they come into office. And so, what we're hearing is a very long list of things that a potential Biden administration would do if Joe Biden, in fact, wins the presidency. I think the reality that they're going to face when they come into office is that they're inheriting, you know, the worst healthcare crisis that we've had in the United States since 1918, and that has to be dealt with forcefully immediately, or it's going to really create an untenably weak situation in the economy, and it's going to perpetuate a tragedy on the healthcare front that is, you know, becoming overwhelming and really overwhelming every aspect of American life. And so that's going to have to be priority number one. And, you know, I think that's going to take a lot of attention and energy, both on the part of the president and the Congress. The second thing is the economy needs assistance. You know, we have a small business sector that's suffering seriously. It's going to continue to suffer. You know, we know that things like restaurants that imply, like, you know, employ 10 or 12 million people in this country are doing very badly. The entertainment industry, the leisure industry, the travel industry is doing very, very badly. And they'll continue to do so until people feel safe enough to go out and behave normally again, which depends on control of the virus. And so, you know, there's got to be a bridge built to the other side for these businesses, or we're just going to have a massive amount of, you know, of failures and of unemployment that results from that. And, you know, it really is fiscal policy that has to take over in the form of, you know, grants, in the form of loans, in the form of unemployment insurance for workers who are suffering, in the form of, you know, payments to households so they can spend as much as possible. There's a large variety of things that could be done, but they do need to be done. And that's another big, you know, problem that the Congress has to tackle. Now, after doing those two things, you know, what could be next on the list is, you know, some kind of beginning of green infrastructure. I think, you know, something like voting rights is something that has to be tackled. Tax reform is something that will be tackled. But broadly, this administration is also going to find itself, you know, with a really unsustainable budget situation, because right now, given the size of the federal budget deficit, given the growth rate of the economy, and given the level of interest rates, we're on a path where the debt to GDP ratio in the United States is just going to continue rising indefinitely and fairly rapidly. And at some point, you know, that will really create a threatening situation with regard to the willingness of investors to continue holding debt from a country whose fiscal fundamentals are, you know, just worsening without limit. And that needs to be dealt with. And, you know, the last two Democratic administrations, Bill Clinton's and Barack Obama's, had to deal with unsustainable fiscal debts and deficit. And, you know, were forced into a set of policies that they didn't want to implement that had to do with accepting the need for fiscal restraint. And they did so. They reorganized budget priorities, but they lived within a budget constraint that was much tighter than they would have liked to, or than they campaigned on. And, you know, I think the Biden administration, if there is a Biden administration, will find itself in the same situation. I'm assuming that if President Trump is reelected, and we have the same, you know, political configuration that we have right now, that there will be a continuation of the status quo, and we'll, you know, have another 4 years of, you know, very significant budget deficits, and you know, essentially the same set of programs which the administration has pursued to date without any major changes. There certainly hasn't been anything talked about on the campaign trail that would give us a strong hint of changes to come.
In light of the election, what should investors be thinking about in the days ahead?
Yeah, what I would say is that, you know, you definitely don't want to make investment decisions in the sort of in an emotional post-election environment, right? Regardless of whether things have turned out the way you hope they would or they haven't turned out that way, you know, that's not a good basis to make an investment decision on. Because what we've seen is that, you know, elections, whether they favor one party or the other, or result in divided government, are typically followed by favorable market environments. And so you might think, you know, in a gut instinct that, you know, the Republican Party is pro-business, and so it's been better for the markets, or the Democratic Party, you know, is kind of, you know, pro-union or pro-worker, and so it's been worse for the markets. History shows that the market does not respond that way. And so don't make decisions based on the outcome of an election. Even when there's uncertainty, even when the election is in the middle of a bad economic period, what we've seen is the market bottom shortly afterwards. And so, you know, this is a time to just have good portfolio management hygiene. So if your portfolios are out of balance, rebalance them to what they should be in terms of long-term asset allocation, but don't make decisions about that underlying asset allocation itself now. This is not a good time to make those kind of decisions. You should do that, you know, over a longer period where you can think about it, evaluate alternatives, and decide what's best for you in a calmer environment.
Thanks to Giulio Martini for his insights today. We'll stay in touch with Giulio as things develop over the coming weeks. In the meantime, be sure to visit lordabbott.com/election2020 for further coverage of the election and its impact on the market.
Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming app of choice. Thanks for listening.
GDP refers to gross domestic product, which is the monetary value of all the finished goods and services produced within a country's borders in a specific time period, though GDP is usually calculated on an annual basis. Asset allocation or diversification does not guarantee a profit or protect against loss in declining markets. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and are subject to change without notice. Projection should not be considered a guarantee. This broadcast may contain assumptions that are forward-looking statements, which are based on certain assumptions of future events. Actual events are difficult to predict and may differ from those assumed. There can be no assurance that forward-looking statements will materialize or that actual returns or results will not be materially different from those described here. This broadcast serves as reference material and is provided for general educational purposes only, does not constitute an offer to acquire, solicitation for an offer to acquire, an offer to sell or solicitation for an offer to buy any securities, nor is intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice on any securities, and cannot be used for any of the foregoing. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The value of investments and any income from them is not guaranteed and may fall as well as rise, and an investor may not get back the amount originally invested. Investment decisions should always be made based on an investor's specific financial needs, objectives, goals, time horizon, and risk tolerance. The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbott's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbott nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given investment idea,
strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances. Note to European investors, this communication is issued in the United Kingdom and distributed throughout Europe by Lord Abbott UK Limited, a private limited company registered in England and Wales under company number 10804287, with its registered office at Talus House, 2 Talus Street, Temple, London, United Kingdom, EC4Y0AB. Lord Abbott UK Limited, FRN 783356, is an appointed representative of Duff & Phelps Securities Limited, FRN 466588, which is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. This broadcast is the copyright 2020 of Lord Abbott & Company, LLC, all rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or any form without the permission of Lord Abbott. Lord Abbott Mutual Funds are distributed by Lord Abbott Distributor, LLC.